This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Crown Family School of Social Work Policy and Practice at the University of Chicago. The master's program in social work, social policy, and social administration prepares professionals to address today's most pressing challenges and offers flexible options with part-time and evening classes to support busy adults balancing complex schedules. Inspire change, shape the future at crownschool.uchicago.edu/social work. WBEZ's nonprofit spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org.
I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset. Food can stir up deep memories of loved ones, of times well spent, of being cared for, even memories of home. Now, if the person who makes this food is still around, all the better. But if that person dies or lives a great distance away, or your encounter with that special dish was while on vacation, how do you get that taste or experience again? Martin Sorge is the winner of the 6th season of The Great American Baking Show. He has recreated recipes of his favorite treats from Dinkles and the Swedish Bakery after they closed, and baked goods from trips that he's taken. I sat down with Martin to learn how he recreates some of his favorite foods, starting with the beloved and closed Swedish Bakery.
They had this dish called the Andersonville Coffee Cake, which had this almond cinnamon filling and this cardamom dough, and I would buy it for anytime folks were coming over to my house or I was going out of town. And so when they closed, I thought, I need to figure this out.
You have written in the Chicago Tribune about figuring out recipes for those treats. And you talk about using your sense of taste and smell as a guide. Amazing. Can you walk us through that process?
Exactly. It's similar to how a musician would recreate a song they heard or an artist would recreate something they had seen. Folks who like to cook, from chefs to home bakers, I sit down and I say, okay, what were those flavors? What was that aroma? I knew there was some almond extract in the filling of the Andersonville coffee cake and some cinnamon. It seemed like some kind of dough that I'd made before. So I just tried to put it all together in my head and recreated. It took a couple of tries, but I got to where, I thought something that evoked those same memories of when I had that dish.
Mm-hmm. How long did that take you?
That one was pretty quick. I think I made 3 or 4 versions of it.
Okay.
I couldn't get it to look exactly the way they had it.
But really?
Because it was this kind of twisted spiral circle that,
I would have loved to have seen your outtakes.
Yes. And every time I do it, it's still a little bit like, is this right? But it tastes the same and the smell is the same. And I, bring it to family gatherings and they're like, yep, you got it.
This is an art, Martin. And I'm hearing you have a very good memory and that you remember everything that you've ever eaten. Ever in life?
I remember when I was a kid, the first time I had risotto at a restaurant, it had peas and mushrooms in it. I don't know why I remember this stuff. I don't remember high school biology, but I remember,
so many things
I've eaten.
In risotto.
Exactly.
Oh my goodness. Well, how does that memory help you just recreate everything?
I think remembering, especially the scents and the flavors, you can kind of break it down. You can say, okay, I know that this had the aroma of vanilla or lemon or almond extract. And okay, what did it look like with that memory? Because I really think, especially scent, we don't always think about as much. We're in a really visual culture right now. And really the sense of things and scent itself really evokes memories. So that's always almost where I start to say, were there toasted nuts? What spices could I smell in this thing? And then I start there and, flavor is a little easier because it's sweet, salty, sour, bitter, umami, like what flavors were in there. And then I think about texture. So I put those things together in my mind and say, okay, what's going on here? What do I remember from this dish? But I usually actually start with kind of the scent and those aromas from it.
So you're starting with the scent of like the flavors and the spices, then you figure out the ingredients and possibly the technique.
Mm-hmm.
And then from there, the texture.
Exactly. So you kind of put them all together and say, okay, was this soft or was it crunchy? Was it flaky? And then that tells you what kind of, you know, if is it a cake or is it a pastry, and what kind of pastry dough might it be? And so you work, you know, I'm a nerd about the baking technique too. So that's where it comes in.
You also used to work as a sommelier for a while.
I did. I was a wine guy for a long time.
And that's, but did that help you in, or teach you sort of how to put memories into words?
Yeah. So with wine, you know, you're selling fermented grape juice in a bunch of bottles. So how do you differentiate it? The key is the aroma. And that actually, especially working with wine or beer, anything you like to drink, it helps you develop your sense of smell and memory, because you have to remember, okay, what did this wine smell like and taste like? Because I'm going to have to sell it to somebody. So how do I describe that smell? And it gives you a lot of practice and working your nose muscles, so to speak.
This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Crown Family School of Social Work, Policy, and Practice at the University of Chicago, where research meets real-world impact. The master's program in social work blends classroom learning with extensive field education guided by faculty known for groundbreaking research. Applications are open at crownschool.uchicago.edu/socialwork. Inspire change. Shape the future. WBEZ's Nonprofit Spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org.
Let's dig more into that connection between taste and smell. Now, earlier, one of our producers sat down with Leslie Kay, who is a professor of psychology and neuroscience at the University of Chicago. She specializes in smell. And here she says that when people say that something tastes good, we hear that all the time, right? What they're really talking about is flavor.
So flavor is taste and smell and touch, like the way food feels in your mouth. But also there's a whole nother touch nerve in your face that senses hot, cold, and irritation. So bubbles that tickle your nose, that's your trigeminal nerve. So though all those four systems together, smell, taste, touch, like texture, and the trigeminal sense, which is part of touch, make flavor.
So good to get the scientific definition, the scientific breakdown. I was actually surprised by her description, because I never think about the way that food feels in my mouth as being touch. Mm. And then that connection to flavor, but it makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just like, you know, I'm glad that she said that, because that's how I think of it, is texture, flavor, and aroma for anything I'm cooking. So that's, yeah, they all work together in your experience of food and beverage.
Yeah, she went on to say that if you're picking up on a specific ingredient, like cherry, for instance, that's smell, right?
Yep, exactly. And certain smells actually are a chemical compound that you're smelling, like in vanilla or in, you know, some wine has the aroma of roses, and it's the same actual chemical volatile compound that you're smelling in those two things. So there is some science even behind aroma.
So according to what you were mentioning earlier, Martin, as you talked about taste and smell and the ingredients and texture, it sounds like we need to be taking mental, very specific notes when we're eating something that's like super delicious that we potentially want to recreate. Is that right?
Exactly. I think people need to, you know, if you're tasting something you love or something, especially a family member is making, you know, spend some time with it and think about it. In addition to, you know, lodging that memory in your mind, think about how you would describe it, like what specific words, even more than just, oh, this was sweet and delicious. Because yes, I'm sure it was sweet and delicious, but what were those flavors? What were the aromas? What was the color? How brown was the cake or the bread that your, you know, grandma made? So think about really specific ways to describe it. Write them down so that you remember, like, okay, yeah, it was really nutty, or she put a lot of nutmeg in this, or it was very, you know, really tangy. Think of those really specific words, because, you know, a lot of folks don't take time to think about the language that they would use to describe the dish, because that description will really help you recreate it.
Well, you know, this happened yesterday. We were celebrating here at WBEZ AAPI Heritage Month, and so we were eating some Asian foods, and one of our producers, we had oxtails on our plates, and I'm used to, as a person from the Caribbean, I'm used to eating oxtail a certain way. And I remember one of our producers who had tasted the dish before I did, the version that was made yesterday, said, oh, is this, I hadn't had oxtail before. Is this how it tastes all the time? Like, is it always this peanutty sauce? Like, she was able to sort of pinpoint exactly what was in the sauce. And another producer said, oh, yes, that's the way we make it in the Philippines. And I was like, oh, how were you even able to sort of distinguish the peanut taste? I don't have that skill.
It's really just a lot of practice and identifying, like, okay, I know what goes into this.
Yeah.
So, oh, if I taste something with that, I recognize that particular flavor. You know, some flavors are strong and easy to recognize and some are more subtle.
Mm-hmm. Well, Professor Kay went on to say in the interview that our brains are experiential and that we can jog the memories of what something tasted like by creating a new experience while eating the dish, and then that in turn can actually help the recipe feel more like the way you remember it. Let's listen.
If you invite your friends over and have a meal and talk about the restaurant and how you used to enjoy going there and make new memories around that food, you may actually have the feeling that you have recreated that food. Where if you were to measure, well, what does this flavor taste like? And you could measure it in the restaurant as well. You might find that things measure differently, but your experience of it will sort of remake that memory of the restaurant.
It's a little different approach than what you take. What do you think?
Yeah, but it makes sense. I think, you know, when we're making new memories a lot, if we're on vacation and we taste something new, especially if we're in, you know, a beautiful setting or on the beach or in the mountains. And I've recreated some recipes I've made on vacation. When I come home, you know, I want to share it with my friends. So I say, hey, everybody come over. I made this cake that I had in Northern Italy. It's so delicious and unique. And then you do recreate that kind of feeling by making an event out of it.
Tell me more about that, the food from your travels, because you're also doing a lot of research at the same time.
Yes. So I just came back from 3 weeks in Germany, actually taking a bread baking course. And so I've been, you know, I brought in a rhubarb kuchen, which is a rhubarb cake I had a few times while I was there, because I said, this is delicious. I have to remake this. I thought I could figure out how to do it. And so, you know, still working on that one.
Still working. Well, swing by when you perfect it, will you? Professor Kay said that now that memory that she was talking about, it would work similarly if you're recreating a recipe from a loved one who's maybe passed away, and it doesn't quite taste the same.
Sit around with your family and tell stories about the person. The flavor may transform to be something memorable, not technically the same, but to you the same.
That's a great idea.
Absolutely.
I'm still trying to get my grandmother's cherry cheesecake down. Yeah, it's not happening. It's not happening. So here's a question for you. What if someone does not have a good memory? What do you recommend?
That's a tough one.
Are they just out of luck?
If you've had something, you know, if you shared it with somebody else, ask them, hey, do you remember what this tasted like? Or what were the key flavor components of it? If you don't have a naturally good memory, take a photo of it like we do these days and say, hey, here's what it looked like. Maybe it'll help me jog my memory of the flavors that were in there. But I also say just, you know, when you're eating, just try to be really present and spend some time to think about and actually put words to those flavors and aromas.
Yes, that's a great idea. So be specific. Specificity is key here, right? Are there resources, Martin, before I let you go, for people to maybe develop a deeper vocab when they're trying to describe food? People like me, I am people.
Yeah, if I would say look up, you know, get on Google and look up like flavor wheel or aroma wheel and things, because there are these, you know, types of flavors and aromas that you can look up that are actually really specific. Or think of, you know, things that you have or your mom has in her spice cabinet, or what herbs they use, and just spend some time smelling that spice, tasting that herb.
And I'll start to sound like a judge on one of those cooking or baking shows, right?
Exactly.
You know a little something about that.
A little bit.
We'll leave it there. That's Martin Sorge, who's a baker and recipe creator. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me again.
This episode of the Reset Podcast was produced by Linnea Dominic, edited by Meha Ahmed, and mixed by Brenda Ruiz. To hear more conversations about food, head over to wbez.org/reset for a full archive of our interviews. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. We'll talk to you this afternoon.
My name is Donald. I live on the southeast side of Chicago. I support WBZ because of the balanced reporting and covering so much about an issue as opposed to just the few seconds that you may hear on most other news outlets. It matters to me to hear the story more completely